Welcome to Cybersecurity Shall Be C-Level Priority, the podcast that puts the digital world to the test. Cyber attacks are on the rise, and data is the most valuable asset in today's world. But how can we protect what matters most to us? Drawing on the latest insights, effective strategies, and practical tools, we'll show you how to create a more secure digital environment. Because one thing is clear, security isn't negotiable. It's a top priority.
If we look at the world today as it is right now, with wars, crises, takeovers, selfishness, populism, we need protection. For a long time, it was always said, yes, no one is going to attack us. We're not that important. And the smart ones have understood, but every company is important, and every company has things that can be important to others. Not just to prevent data theft, but you also have to be secure internally. Yes, cybersecurity is such a heavy word. No, it's weighing down. So what do I do with that? You think of a hacker, you think of certain nations that have hundreds of trolls sitting there and overwhelming my servers, if I even understand at all what that is.
Hello, and welcome to a new episode of Cybersecurity Chef Sash, the podcast. Today, I'm not in my recording studio again, but with a special guest. We're on site at Tuga today. And Tuga, we want to talk about one of my favorite topics today. Talk about one of your favorite topics, namely the issue of the skill shortage. But before we get started with that, maybe for everyone who doesn't know you yet, which I don't believe, because everyone who is active on LinkedIn should know you and hear a clear recommendation. Follow him because his posts really have a purpose, and it's always nice to read what you post. But enough of the Lewis bark. Just tell us briefly who you are and what you do.
Thank you for kind words. My name is Tugar Zina. I am the managing director of the company Rhinewest HR Solutions, and we do everything related to HR, except labor law and working hours. And I'm glad you're here today. I'm looking forward to the conversation. And yes, the skills shortage is indeed a topic close to my heart. One could philosophize about whether it even exists or not. But let's put it this way. We won't be able to find the solution, but we can say that the skills shortage is by no means as severe as he always communicates, but we'll take the time right away.
What has your experience been like? How has the market changed in recent years? I mean, we keep talking about the skills shortage. I mean, you're right at the source. Your company also advises other companies. We already talked before about how cybersecurity has become a very important topic for you. I've been doing this for 11 years now. When I started 11 years ago, cybersecurity wasn't really in focus at all.
It wasn't really in focus. It all starts with the fact that IT wasn't in focus. I think it is the beneficiary of the last 10 years. Just to strengthen its position, back then IT was in the basement, an office without windows, and the colleagues didn't understand anyone anyway. They did their thing, and they were called for printers, phones, but also for software. And what happened then, of course, is that we all moved from on-prem to the cloud. We had to take necessary security measures. We had to do a lot of things. And thanks to globalization, it's also the case that you naturally buy one or another company, and then you standardize the whole IT. That means we have one. A completely new awareness has emerged, or rather, the awareness has shifted a bit to the center of society, and the relevance of IT was recognized. Moreover, maybe one has also understood it at times, except for VW, they understand. I still don't believe it with Taliot. They haven't understood it. But first of all, IT is not a small area, and especially not cybersecurity. When we look at the world today, as you just mentioned, with wars, crises, takeovers, selfishness, populism, then we need protection. And for a long time, it was always said, yeah, no one is going to attack us. We're not that important. And the smart ones have understood that every company is important, and every company has things that can be important to others. Not just to clarify data theft, but you also have to be secure internally. And now it's also been understood that you need more than just technicians. You need awareness consultants. You need people for training. So a lot of things have unfolded. The shortage of skilled workers eventually hit us, that they said, we want to have professionals everywhere. We want professionals everywhere with experience. Of course, you don't have that. And you can, of course, cushion that by saying we can train our own people. And that's a bit of the key that people in Germany still don't want to use, to train your own people and actually be a training company in these areas.
You're touching on a topic that's very close to my heart. I keep saying this in the podcast. Train your own people, because for cybersecurity, you need passion, dedication, and someone who supports you. But maybe looking back at the journey you've been on, you just said, like, IT and cyber have come into focus. I often still see the difficulties that companies don't really grasp this. Cyber, I mean, this big bubble indeed. How multifaceted. That's that they might be looking for someone conservative, but actually need a pen tester, so to speak. Do you see that in yourself?
So there are some really great companies. They are often unknown in cybersecurity, and they do really great work and are filled with very qualified people, and they only take on certain projects. And on the flip side, you also have to understand the customer side. Customer is sitting, his business model is maybe to manufacture screws, and he has a production facility and some drawings and customer data. Sometimes he also lacks awareness of the risk he is currently exposed to. And now there's one more thing to add. Yes, cybersecurity is such a heavy word, it weighs down. So what do I do with that? You think of hackers, you think of certain nations that have hundreds of trolls sitting there and overwhelming my servers, if I even understand at all what that is. But you don't understand what it's about. And security isn't expensive. Security is not a thing. We don't need to build technical walls right now. You still need a firewall, of course. You need disaster recovery. You need capable people and so on. So we first need to create this understanding. And of course, we also need to understand where there is really an increased risk. And maybe we should say goodbye to the idea that we will always have 100% protection. We can only make sure of that, that we make it difficult for any attackers on the employee side. That means, of course, you need people who can't do everything today. You need people who are willing to learn tomorrow, to learn the day after tomorrow. And even when no one is watching, do the right things. Because the biggest risk for a company is that they stay and are still the insiders. That's a completely different problem. Then also, and you just don't think about it. So it's how you turn it. You always have more than just one area that you need to recognize.
And what I can also say about that is you just mentioned the topic of INTI, which I often see. There are enough people in the company who have the know-how, who are developing themselves privately because they're interested, who take a look at offers like try hack me, hack the box, and whatever else just for fun, to take a look at that and roughly deal with the topics. And then they might be sitting in an IT position or another position and are not allowed to. And I've lived that before, that it can also shift. So of course, no comments to make anyone who can't do something now. He's becoming an insider, but you already have the resources that a company should provide to help someone develop further. They are simply not seen, because that's a bit like try hack me. It's kind of private nonsense, so to speak. Playground, exactly. It's like a playground, but it doesn't help me for the job. And I think there's still the problem that we don't have a classic training path in cybersecurity.
It's also hard to establish that because the technology is developing much faster as we can keep up, especially in Germany. We're very slow with a lot of things. But the word about insiders is we're usually looking for qualifications, or most companies are looking for qualifications. So every teacher goes home and says, oh, today we had a really good cybersecurity expert. With sensitive topics, we need to pay attention to character. We need to pay attention to personality traits. It doesn't help if someone is really super, super qualified, but has a very, very deficient character trait. The worst is, yes, a professional who knows how it works, and then also has bad character traits. He will cause much more harm than people outside. But no one indeed brings out the risk and also the passion. No one wants to take that risk that you say, we now have 10 top qualified people filtered out, because they don't bring integrity, because they don't bring self-discipline. No one wants to do that. That's why contracts are outsourced or the wrong people are hired. And on the other hand, very, very important, what you're just saying, if I have the skills in the company, then I need to mobilize them. Am I mobilizing them? Frustration and disappointment build up. Each of us knows that. Everyone has experienced this at some point. A colleague is treated well at a certain point in their career. And you're sitting there saying, actually, I would have that. I already suggested it last year, or actually, I would have been much better suited for that. And if you're not careful, that's the biggest risk in your company. So an employee says, I'm going to wipe one of you out.
Did you catch the trend? Hacker, in management, or I don't even remember what the wording was back then, from the big companies that said, hey, we need to hire all hackers so that we can be sure.
Chim.com and Deutsche Telekom.
Exactly. A similar example.
It keeps happening. It also comes from companies. I don't want to say whether it's good or bad. There are white hat hackers. They really draw attention to things. It's a great business model, a great negotiating position. When I say I hacked you, and be glad it was me and not someone else, and I would like 250,000 euros for the fact that this will never happen to you again, you can do that, right? But this trend is still there, not so publicly anymore. And honestly, I also know a lot of CEOs who were hackers themselves and who say, I've done that 10 times, but I never said anything and then turned it into a business model and now I'm making money from it. You can do anything, right?
I actually believe that's true. Even in the cybersecurity field, especially when it comes to red teaming, blue teaming, and pen testing, there are many such individuals. But you also brought an important sentence, and I want to emphasize that again. This topic of mindset and soft skills, I see this quite often, that you keep getting approached. When it comes to job postings, or generally when you apply to a company, that there is a strong focus on the topic of technology. So especially this topic of CISO, for example. You can also share your opinion on that right away. How you do that? I often get asked about that. Hey, a CISO has to be technical. My mindset is very clear. 80% has to be your mindset and the skills. In other words, to look for the right positions within the company, I used to say I was a kindergarten teacher, but Tim is going to roast me for that, so I don't say it anymore. There is also another synergy that says translator. In the end, you are just ultimately the one who has to work with different departments in the company, who needs to understand how certain things work, but doesn't necessarily have to have high-level technical know-how, but they know where to get it from IT or elsewhere. You can get it. And that's why I clearly say a CISO is 80% their mindset and the ability to assert themselves, as well as to look for the right positions, and 20% technical. Would you agree with that?
Yes, I would agree. So it can also be 70, 30, or 90, 10. These are key positions. A CISO is, of course, responsible for his own team on one side. That's technology-oriented. On the other hand, at the C-level, you deal a lot with business partners, or in general, you have to convert the technology into human terms. Why is this important for sales? Why is security important for procurement? What data do we have? If we just stick to the overarching term data theft and data risk, why is it important that we handle our customer data? Well, with our pricing data, with our supplier data, and so on, you need this business case, and you need to grasp the business model. That's important. There are a lot. There are hundreds of thousands of people sitting in a company who don't understand the company's business model. How do I make money? Where do costs arise? Where do I have which controls? And with what things can I contribute to value creation? Most IT people, you knew a few years ago, have no idea how value creation works in a company. They say, I'm responsible for the network, but where is your place in the value chain? And how can you ensure this, that when you're here in the chain, that value creation happens somewhere else? Value creation in businesses is shown by costs, revenue, etc. That's why a soft skill is important. It's easy to argue with qualifications. Has 10 years of professional experience. He already pointed out the mistake back then with Leonie. Yeah, then everyone says, wow, that someone like that is on the market. We'll take that right away. But in German, no one has thought about that, whether he's an asshole or not. So, what good does it do us if we really have the fully qualified skills? But when we have problems, we need to communicate with these people in teamwork and resilience. So, there are about 7 or 8 soft skills that everyone should have. Among others, the ones I've listed, plus assertiveness, the ability to take criticism and so on. We want to get along when we talk to each other. We don't just want to say, yeah, I know how the technology works here. That's what a team is for. For that, I have a head of department or a specialist or a senior. The CISO needn't do that. But the CISO should provide the team with the information and translate it, where the business is currently facing security issues or what risks can currently arise due to current topic energy. How do we need to change energy, logistics, and the supply chain that we can become self-sufficient or independent? need to understand that you don't need to understand how energy is stored. It's what you have people for. And for the past 2 or 3 years, we've been thinking about the energy supply chain because of a war at our doorstep where people said, that won't happen. Or we saw it during Corona. How should logistics work so that we all still have toilet paper? And how can we represent that digitally and in terms of data? That's what you have a team for. You don't have to do that yourself. So there needs to be a shift, and I completely agree with you. 80 or sometimes 90% are soft skills.
But aren't the current job postings not counting?
You're not. I don't want to settle the score. Sometimes I just get really angry, but no, they are not. So the average CISO, if we can portray him, who has grown into this role that also exists, people grow into roles because they've been in the company for so long that we say, yes, we need to give him a target role now. Otherwise, it's unfair. He grows into it and might have no idea about it. He will also profile himself with that he is well-equipped technologically. But if I'm looking for a CISO today, let's say in the age range of 30 and up, I won't reach him by just listing his entire tech stack. He knows himself that this isn't the job. The job isn't about knowing the latest software every day, but the job is what can I achieve? What risks need fending off? What level of security? How auditable is the whole thing? Do I also need to set up a governance? Do I maybe have to take over a legacy from someone who has been trying to set up governance for 6 years? And I must not change them. That burdens him much more than if I say, look, you're getting 50,000 less, but the task is complete. New governance. Make us auditable, make us secure, and then the role will grow up to where as well. People are into that. People aren't into that. When you say you have such a narrow corridor, and within that you're welcome to unfold yourself, even if you don't fit in there at all, that's why I don't like all these job postings. They are too focused on the qualifications and indeed respect the person too little. And then you console yourself with the fact that you get hundreds of unsuitable applicants because people say, oh, that's a great company. And yet, in the 100 applications, there's not a single one. I prefer to have 5 applicants and 4 of them are really great. That's enough.
I agree with you. What I also see is a bit of the appreciation of the whole topic. So, especially when you talk to companies, the so-called cybersecurity, I don't want to say new because that's not the case now that men, they don't have to reinvent the wheel, but they are now focusing more on these topics, who might be looking for a CISO or an ISB or whoever they want to call the role, that often someone is chosen who can't run away fast enough, or someone who just graduated from university and said, okay, now we'll take this one and train them up. I see that more often, to say, okay, yeah, someone has to do it. And now let's look for someone within the company. We talked about how it's key to take someone from within the company, but in my opinion, it's also wrong to take someone from within the company and just push the role onto them.
No, that doesn't work either. So it's always a mix. If you have the people, do it with them. If you don't have them, you need to find or train them, whatever. I think a big problem is also performance management in this area, because when it comes to our own people, we always think they know everything. They know the company, they know the culture, which is always very, very good if you want it. Not everyone wants to move up into a higher role. There are specialists who say, I'm staying here. That's something that needs to be respected. There's nothing better than saying, I have a specialist for this topic. The question is, how often do I earn with the money? How often is his expertise used? On the other hand, you also need people from outside who bring in know-how and certain character traits that you simply don't have, to be a bit more critical, or maybe to have a bit more facilitation skills, or. But in all these things, are we experiencing that companies have a lot of difficulties managing and recognizing performance in this area? But you can also do that very easily. Speaking spontaneously, the normal company, I would say 500 to 1,000 employees, have absolutely no idea where the differences lie between a good cybersecurity expert if they were to train one, let alone that they don't even know how to train and develop him. And what problems and tasks should you let him tackle? But where is his performance? So is it security? There isn't a state of being safe or not safe.
Some companies wish for that. Like a traffic light, you can say, hey, oh, I'm sure now.
No, We also had that in the area of data at the beginning of the pandemic with data engineers. There are data engineers who have been working on the same product for years and haven't found any errors. That means they're doing their job well. The manager says, you haven't found any errors. You're not anything. If there are no errors, we're looking for stability. In the data, just like with data scientists, when you say, but you have to drive revenue. No, I can't drive revenue. I can provide you with the basis for the decision that a certain product should be produced in a specific quantity and sold at a certain price so that the likelihood of purchase is as high as possible. I can guarantee that, and it's the same with cybersecurity, I can find security vulnerabilities, then I might find 20 of them. And then, unfortunately, I work more than one day on most problems because I just need a lot of it. A lot of side knowledge, and maybe I'm safe today and I was safe yesterday. Whether I'm safe tomorrow, I'll only know tomorrow. And then I have to work on it again. So performance is unfortunately not tangible there. And many companies don't understand that how they should do it. And when you give them the idea, they say, oh, we have to spend more money on that. That's still a problem. We already have good people, spend money again. Then it really won't be a good solution.
Do you see, with the clients you talk to, also this topic, when we talk about training, especially this topic of certificates, many will laugh now. I have my own opinion about certificates. I myself have two certificates and I'm keeping them. At some point, you just have to do it. But basically, that's my personal opinion. Certificates are just smoke and mirrors. There are certainly certificates, especially in the cybersecurity field. Those that are really very specific and have very specialized knowledge. But I always tell myself a certificate is basically just memorization, learning from questions or retrieving knowledge at a specific time. But connecting that with practice, that's actually the challenge. What you would need a certificate for, and not just to retrieve knowledge. And aside from that, many certificates are, let's say, international, which are then standardized, and that we don't really need them here in Germany. And that's why I always say you have to shine with knowledge by being able to show it, in which you can also, so to speak, afford it. And the other thing is a certificate. But when you're in initial contact with someone or trying to find someone, so for many companies, there's really just one option left to look. How can I measure that? And that's why where I see it. Clearly, of course, the topic of certificates. But I would also be interested in your opinion. How can you, or what do you recommend to use it as a measurable tool when you have a conversation with a candidate?
I don't want to deny the value of certificates for those who have them. For those who are considering it, I would say exactly the same thing you said. Learning things from a standard, it's nice for yourself. Anyone can do it. There are also purchasable things, and on LinkedIn, there are plenty of certificates. We'll be done in 15 minutes. I'm a friend of really pay attention to the soft skills first. So what is that? Let's take two areas of responsibility. Let's take the cybersecurity consultant. So the typical person who is responsible for this topic in companies, what does he need to do? He needs to do other things as the specialist who might be, who manages Azure Cloud. So the person who takes care of the Azure Cloud in the ongoing project, maybe you don't need to talk so much with external people. So let him be an analyst. Let him be a bit more introverted. Let him get into it. So with the consultant, I pay much more attention to communication skills, moderation skills, and assertiveness, and things that, so the requirements are different. I need to measure that. If I put both of them through the same test or focus on the same certification for both, then only one of them will win. If I don't know I'm doing there, I'm always a fan of work samples. Give me a work sample, a realistic one that can actually occur in the job role I've applied for, that can actually happen daily or can happen regularly. If I'm in incident response, then let me, but please don't analyze a contract or something like that. That's not for me. Please give me an incident response task. But if I'm supposed to be a consultant and you want to test my skills, then go ahead. The average issues faced by your last five clients that keep coming up in your target group. And let me prepare a pitch because I'm a consultant. I really like that. Then I also see live conditions. Then I can also participate as a customer. Then we have a role play or something like that. we're already getting a sense of it. But if I look at certificates and say, Nico, you are 2 certificates short, and the one thing you bring with you, we don't need that, then I can't punish you for that, that you have furthered your education, not a reason for decision.
You are speaking directly from my heart because I remember my past in an assessment center. In my early years, I wanted to become an SAP consultant. Because back then, cybersecurity was my passion, but it wasn't very successful in Germany. You can say that quite clearly. And I was asked the question in such an assessment, Mr. Werner, can you tell me how many highway kilometers there are in Germany? I thought about that question for 2 minutes until she finally answered. What does that have to do with my job? I was like that. In quotation marks, blinded at that moment, I came up with 1,000 ideas and 1,000 solutions because you want to show that you are the right one. And in that moment, I just thought to myself, yeah, this is the wrong company for me. I understood the goal behind it afterwards. They just wanted to know how I analyze, how I approach the topic, how I think, and so on and so forth. But I see that quite often too. Just what you mentioned, when it comes to doing a work sample, then there are some strange role-playing games or do this, do that, which has nothing to do with your job. I once had a situation, especially in the consulting field, where I said, for me, for example, it is also stress-resistant, important. And I gave the candidate the task just 2 days beforehand. You could say I was mean and put him under stress, but that was exactly my goal. And I didn't want to see whether he could do it or not, but I wanted to see how he deals with that stress. How did he handle it? Very good. So he came to me honestly and said, look, Nico, I'm not going to make it because I have a problem with that. That's too short notice and so on. He then suggested solutions, what else he can do. And that's what I found important. It's not about dropping everything and saying, hey, I'm now doing everything with the mindset of I'm going to do whatever my boss wants. I don't need a robot. I need someone who can think and make their own decisions. And especially in the consulting field, I find it important time and again, you often find yourself as a lone fighter. And it cannot be that as a boss, I always have to shake their hand and say, you can do that now. You shouldn't do that, but he should be able to decide independently. And in the end, I can maybe support him, or that's also my duty as a boss to support him, but he has to be able to do that. And I always thought that was really good back then. He stood up, he thought about it. He also communicated openly and honestly right away. And I found that much, much more important than the final work result he delivered as a presentation.
Yes, I think that's great. Just because you have the same clients. As a consultant, I would say it doesn't matter what number of clients, one is nice and the other might be stressed. Then you also deal with IT on the other side with your clients. Some see you as a competitor, some don't. You have to be an absolute people person, and it's not about that. Whether AWS or Azure is good or whether the recovery file is good, but it's primarily about that we understand other on a human level, it's a nose business. I keep saying that. If that's true, then we can work on everything. And then you also have to be resilient and stress resistant that you say, hey, look, we see this as ABCD in that order. And you say CBA. So let's talk about why that is and where we might find common ground to find. Then you can talk about technology later, but the personal connection has to be right, and you have to pay attention to that. You did really well. You said, how do I find out about stress? So I create stress. Many companies don't do that. Many companies ask, who do I need to stay with the consultant? He just needs to communicate more, as he can implement it technically himself. Then we measure him by certificates. On know-how, so really on technical things that he has nothing to do with anyway. Just because we don't know how, he can show us that he knows what he's talking about. That's not his fault, that's my fault. The company, I need to lay the foundation for him, what he will find, so that he or she feels that way from the very beginning. Hey, this is my realistic work scenario. It doesn't make any sense if I try to test you in a certain way. After the employment contract, you realize that things are done differently here.
All these classic questions, where do you see yourself in 5 years?
So in 2019, no, the other way around. In 2015, everyone answered this question wrong because we had no one came to see that either. So there are always about 3 or 4 questions That's the opener, you know, blah, 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 how's it going, and so on. What you just said, those are the brain teaser questions. There are so many kilometers of highway. How many golf balls fit in a Boeing have nothing to do with job. And then there are these ridiculous questions. So name your strengths and weaknesses.
You know what I always answer? When someone asks me about my weaknesses, I always say, I don't like chocolate.
Ice too.
Why do I say that? Because it's always, first of all, an icebreaker. It's that you laugh about it. And then the question comes, why not like that? And then I explain to them that weaknesses are dependent on situations. There might be a general weakness. Sure, you can talk about that. But in the end, it's like this. A weakness can also be a strength. And that's why I find these questions, strengths, weaknesses. And that's absolutely ridiculous, because you first have to be in the situation with that person to then see, how does he react to the weakness? Because having a weakness is one thing. The other thing is dealing with that weakness and turning it back into a strength.
And maybe it has nothing to do with the job. So that's another thing. I mean, you just talked a lot about yourself. I would have so many questions still without interrogating you. And still, I would have done a job interview without you noticing it. And that's the art of it. People shouldn't feel like they're in a job interview. Where see yourself in 5 years? What are your star weaknesses? What is a go-no-go? I find them so boring. Just have a cool conversation. You just said you wanted to become an SAP consultant. I would have something between what you wanted and what you have become. I would have so many questions. What has happened in your life? Now you could say, I fell in love. Ah, cool. Go tell me more. You would have told me so many things in a casual conversation. I could have casually probed further. And I could keep giving you little bits about the job and say, ah, that fits really well. Because in that job, we need that too, and so on. That might be something different. It's more about things like that. So, and then we talk. And you walk out of here thinking, that was a cool conversation. And that's my goal. My goal is not to finish in 45 or 60 minutes. To put you under pressure, or something like that. And honestly, yes, my God, where should I see you in 5 years? The family man wants to provide for his family, wants to move forward, wants a reasonable learning curve, wants to make money, paying rent, and
seeing the boss's chair at work, yeah.
When he's at work, he just wants to do his job well. So, what should he want?
I think there's also a bit of this theme that I've noticed myself, that there's also a bit of this prejudice in my generation. Those are all like people, they love work-life balance.
Yeah, millennials.
Yeah, where everyone somehow wants work-life balance and doesn't really want to work anymore. And I'm, for example, one of those people. Some teacher would probably scream and say, Nico, you can't say that. When I go to a job interview for consulting with someone, I make it very clear to them, look, I'm a family man myself, and I can tell you there's no such thing as a 40-hour work week. It's just like that. I care as a boss. To the best of my knowledge and belief, that's how it happens. But ultimately, we in consulting are always dependent on the client. If the customer need help, especially with something like incident response, I can't just hang up the phone and say, by the way, it's after hours now, and that's it. And I think it's fair to pass that on to someone. And I've noticed that also in last conversations, that it often gets swept under the rug. It starts off like we're managing everything somehow, and it's all going to work out. And also, especially this topic, family planning, travel activities. We already talked about that at the beginning. Before the corona period, I was always on the go, not at all during the corona period. And after the corona period, it gradually starts to pick up again. But it's never at that peak like it was before corona. Then there are also people who just don't want that. They say, hey, I'd rather be with my family more, whatever. And then I just think it's fair to let people know this now and say, look, you have to travel. In comparison to before, it's more manageable for me now. I can plan my own trips. I'm not on the road the whole week anymore, just maybe 2 or 3 days. Lies in the responsibility. And I often had the feeling people don't talk about it so openly and honestly.
Don't do that. So, unfortunately, we observe that too. I mean, in every project phase, there are phases right at the beginning and right at the end that you might want to mention to the client. And in between, you can arrange it that way. At the beginning, you have to say it. When we have a new client, we need to go there. That's it. Until the relationship is established and stable, then kind of falls by the wayside. But then things always happen that are not predictable, where you say, look, I'm coming over. So you can't rule that out either. You can never guarantee that either. I'm not a fan of sugarcoating things, especially from a certain position. And for a certain area of expertise, we know that 40 hours just isn't feasible. Just because that's the case doesn't mean there aren't other phases where it might be 30 hours.
I have trust-based working hours. There are times when I can do something else because I did something else. And I feel the same way. We already had that conversation about working from home. Many people demonize working from home and say, hey, the employees aren't working properly or I can't control them and so on. I tell myself, well, if I can't trust my employee while they're working from home, then I should generally think about it. Is this the right employee?
But those are also things that you can figure out. You can work those out. You can also work on those permanently. It's always about needs and conditions. If you have a work need and my working conditions fit that, then we'll be happy. It gets really bad when my working conditions and your needs are so far apart, but I still force you to fit into that. It doesn't work. And if I'm being honest, I'm not a fan of working from home as an employer, and I don't want that out for whatever reason. Then I shouldn't communicate that either. Then I need to communicate my job postings and interviews from the start. That doesn't exist for me. Then you also have to live with the consequences. Then people won't apply. On the contrary, you can't judge that anyway. Even if they're sitting in the office, can't you judge what are they doing? But they can just bang away at the keyboard all day or play Minesweepers or something like that. You have your timesheet. Every consultant knows the documentation. The customer will notice it afterwards. If you lied about that, internally it will be noticeable too. If you book all those hours in the testing environment for 20 hours, then everyone will say, that's a run-of-the-mill problem. We don't need 20 hours for that. So you're talking nonsense. So you have to trust people a little bit. Honestly, and you have to create a setup where you say, in this setup, I accept that I can grow or not grow at a certain speed. So let's say no remote work, only two offices in Germany and only certain clients. You won't get 100 people for that. That means your company will grow more slowly. Maybe there are customers out there for that, but you won't get the consultants. On the flip side, if you want to grow quickly, you need to change your conditions. You need to offer flexible working hours. You need a mobility platform. Maybe offer it so that people can travel by train, plane, or car, and so on and so forth. This leads to a larger pool of applicants. This means you can get new customers, acquire if you have good sales skills, and you will grow faster. So the employer has to think a lot about this beforehand. And the problem in Germany is we don't think about it. And when we've done it, we say, I actually wanted the other one. Then we have, of course, the whole drama.
I wanted to bring up a topic again. We've kind of gone off track a bit. We talked earlier about the topic of training. I already mentioned in our preliminary discussion, it's quite classic. Cybersecurity training is now available in a few universities and schools. There are also measures that you can do something as a career changer. We've already talked about AZRV measures, about exactly how we find the whole thing. Let's keep that to ourselves. But what do you see right now in terms of someone wanting to get into this field as a career changer? What would be your recommendations that you would pass on to someone?
You definitely need to bring some know-how about the technology. Let's differentiate again. If I'm a consultant, do I need to understand the topic? I don't have to be able to implement it, but I do need to understand how my partner on the other side is talking. Who am I talking to? With the head of IT or head of security or CISO, whatever. These are people who do nothing else all day. And that's not a bad thing. If they know that I have less knowledge, but they should never feel I don't understand them. So I need to be able to understand those people. And if I have this understanding, then I have to think about it, about everything you've listed. We don't work 40 hours. We also need to travel around a bit. There can also be a spontaneous attack or a lot of things. If my life fits with it and I like this work environment and my learning curve is still steep, then I can, of course, apply. But I really need to make it clear why I want to go into this field. And there's no bad reason for it. There are good reasons that are strong. If someone says that in the next 10 years you can make money there, that's okay too. That's perfectly fine too. Then the company just has to find that. But I do really want to understand what passion a career changer brings. And let's talk about the project people, the ones who really implement the technology. Then I would, of course, like to know, how do you handle this responsibility? So we also have to Career changer? First, clearly explain where the knowledge comes from and how reliable this knowledge is. I can understand companies there too. They say one work sample is not enough for us. But we are ready. That's definitely something to appreciate. We are ready to take a look at that. But I would, of course, like to have it laid out. How do you handle this power of discovering security vulnerabilities? Or you ensure security? And so on. And if you can communicate that well, really, if you can communicate that well, if you can back that up with your own motivation and your own intention, you could, for example, say, I am an intern person. I don't want the company to suffer just because of measures. The ones I can avoid and so on and so forth, then you can create a good story from that. Of course, you have to prove yourself a bit more in this area because you're dealing with absolute processes. Plus, nerds. That's another thing. But if you find your place there and say, I've also created a bit of value here, or create a bit more value so that the company can move forward, then that's usually enough. So we experience this every day that we find here and there, not many, but here and there regularly. Career changers find who can also demonstrate that they bring the know-how and also bring in a fresh perspective, because they simply come from a field where the IT people say, hey, that's a really cool perspective that he brought in. We really didn't have that on our radar at all. And then it can become a good story.
Do you see it that way often? Isn't the fight for talents also being launched? Or rather, they say, yes, many of us are currently in this fight for talents. Do you see it the same way?
Yes, it already exists. The cause is the problem. So, of course, if there are two people out there, and you need two people and I need two people, then we're fighting over them. We're outbidding each other. There are benefits. It becomes parental. That we say here, sabbatical and workation and so on. So, it has nothing to do with the job. So, now we can fight. We could also say now, look, Nico needs two consultants. And mine might not be that busy at all. So, what do I actually want? I want to earn more money. I want to satisfy more customers. What can I do? I could train my employees so that they have even more know-how. I could then use that to increase my daily rate or my project rate. And I just have to tell my client that my people have actually become much better than they were 2 years ago. And that's why I can't maintain the €1,200 daily rate anymore. But we need to go up to €1,600 now. So, then I have a learning curve with the same people. They have developed further. They earn more money. I earn more money. I don't lose a single client and don't even have to outbid myself. With some things, that means I take my resources and invest them in my people. That takes a few days longer. And in that case, you take your resources and grab what's out there on the market. Because you say, oh, I don't feel like training or developing my people at all. So then I'm already out of this fight. We do it that way. I don't know how many days that is for you. The average consultant does. I would assume that they are not all at their limit right now. Let's take a simple example. Let's say a company has 10 consultants. The consulting rate is 1,000 euros. If they now do 100 consulting days a year, handling 1,000, other things keep them busy. They earn 100,000 for the company. But they also want to have a salary of 100,000. But if you give me 100,000, if someone brings in 100,000 euros in revenue, maybe I can spend 60, 65. There's a lot more that comes into play. And from that little bit, there are still overheads. Yes, then it's also in my interest to say, look, I need to raise the daily rates, but I also have to train the people that the daily rate proves itself. Then I need to free the people from nonsense side tasks. So, freeing them from secondary and tertiary work components so they can really focus on value creation. And then I also have to give the clients where you say, you know what, 100 days is just ridiculous. I'll do 140 days. So I have 140 days instead of 1,400 made euros and can then say, ha, Nico, really cool work. You've been with us for 3 years now. The 65, we can't leave it at that. Let's make it 80. You're satisfied. I'm satisfied. We have more money. Our KPIs have improved. But you're not leaving. You know, you'll get better with me. So that's just the way it is. Of course, you also need a few people out there, and you can specifically choose them. But with all the topics we discussed earlier, if your job ad is good, if you know how to measure people, if you know where to deploy them and so on, and then you're out of this area, and that's what's interesting, that people are in this war for talents or fight for talents and don't even think about it, that they actually don't have to fight this battle at all.
I think what I've seen time and again Especially in this area, the IT industry, it's always fast, rapidly growing and quickly adapting. And when I started back then, I still remember it from my parents. It was sometimes like that, 20, 30 years in one company, sometimes from training all the way to retirement in one company. I don't see that anymore these days because it's changing so quickly. Changed? I'm not a fan of it myself. To do something new every year. But I can also understand people to some extent, as you just mentioned, if you are not being supported, if you don't get any prospects, the market is huge and there's always someone fighting for it. And I think especially what you mentioned, this topic of training and further education, it's really quite easy to do these days. There are platforms, for example, LinkedIn Learning, maybe not the best, but there are platforms that companies can provide, customers that companies can provide. There really is a lot. And as you already said, one person throws it out there, just throwing benefits around. The other person is throwing benefits around. For me, it all has to do with appreciation. And I can personally say that for me, appreciation isn't always a monetary aspect or a financial aspect, but appreciation also has to do with other topics. And I believe that companies can still do a lot more for their employees, just showing appreciation in a different way.
Yes. So I would say that many companies lack a personnel strategy. So there is a corporate strategy, which is usually X percent increase in sales, customers, and so on and so forth. The personnel strategy underneath has to say that we can only generate this revenue when there is an increase in personnel here and there, or that the know-how is there. Just like with customers, if I want to have new customers, what do I need? I need leads. I need a sales team. I need a marketing team. So then I can start thinking, are these goals achievable with a team? Or are they at their limit? Are they at limit? Need new people? When do I recruit them? Where do I find them? Is there a difference if a new salesman comes in January or only in October? And so on and so forth. And then I have to, according to my explanation, there are about 8 areas in a company that you need to have under control. That's employer branding. No matter how strong or not, that's talent attraction. So, my employers and the attraction of applicants. Then, talent acquisition. How do I act and how quickly can I go after talents? When I find you, then the whole block of recruiting. Then tools, processes. Then you have onboarding, retention. So how do I engage people? How do I get them into my company? Then you also have the big topic of talent management. So the training of people and development to make them better. More value creation and personnel strategy. If you have covered these 8 areas, then nothing will ever happen to you in the company again. But you have to be able to make them aware. So, if we start from the beginning, again with training, the education of the people. The worst thing you can do, you will probably agree, is to impose further training on people and say, just do this. So the consultant might need further training on the latest risks that exist, a few cases, but he definitely needs a lot more training in his personality traits. The project manager may be in other areas and in energy, in completely different areas. That means it only makes sense if I can do training in terms of value creation and personal development. That means I always liked it at my previous employers when I was able to develop personally as well. If it did me good, and I understood every employer said, watch out, Tiger, I'm giving you a training for your personal development, but I also want you to do one on the technical side. But please choose which one. And then I knew how it works. And if we now take a look at the whole complex with Cretis, the umbrella law, and NIS2, I think we're there more than just oversleeping. And this year, it probably won't work either. And the global risks we are exposed to, I can't recruit that many people at all. There aren't that many people at all. So just to cover the Cretis umbrella law and NIS2, there aren't many consultants in Germany. We currently have just a few hundred who can create this auditing capability, and we would need thousands. So I have to keep an eye on things, that it is done efficiently and my people do it well. So this look inward. What do I offer to help people improve? Stay long, come to me quickly, feel free to stay with me and also earn money. And comfortably. That's much more important than going out and saying, we need 5 more people, but everyone else needs that too. And you eventually lose that battle when salaries start to rise. So the complexity is, I think, not yet arrived everywhere. It hasn't been understood everywhere yet. The solution seems simple compared to the complexity.
When you say that, I actually believe that many companies struggle with it. And above all, this topic of retaining employees with a topic appreciation, it's already a challenge for many companies.
That usually doesn't exist, so let's not kid ourselves. And it might sound a bit harsh now, but appreciation usually stops after the signature or after the onboarding. We like to butter up candidates, then we want them, and then they get wrapped in sugar. Then you come into the company, then there's a final onboarding, then there's also an event or something like that, and eventually it's over. At some point, the role changes, and then we say, now deliver. Appreciation isn't about us having to butter each other up and pat ourselves on the back all day. Appreciation is when I can also say during the tough project phase, to put it bluntly. Sorry, Nico, that slipped my mind last time. We haven't had much time together, but I'm glad that you're here. And how you handled here was really good. So that's enough. We don't have to do that anymore. You go home and think, oh, but he saw it. What I've accomplished here, that's nice. No? So you can definitely back that up with a few other nice things. Money is always part of it. Maybe a gift or a lunch every now and then is also part of it. But that's all there is to it. But if I only tell people that when things go wrong, we know that from home. Try telling your partner, you know that I love you. It's different from saying, I just wanted to tell you that I love you.
When I say that to my wife, you know that I love you, I know what happens.
Yes, but it's like this. People all function the same way in that regard. So this, you already know, is, yeah, I know, but I wouldn't even have it. Still belongs. And I'm 45, so when I hear from my clients, Dad, I love you, it warms my heart. Yeah, because if my son were to say, Dad, you know, yeah, I know, but still, just tell me. And it's the same at work. It's now, we don't buy people. So many employers forget that. Those who believe, many forget, you may have 100, 200, 500,000. You can pay 100, 200, 500,000 euros in salary, but the people don't belong to you. It's not like you're enslaving people for the money. And tell them honestly, I'm glad you're here. You did a great job. It was a great performance this year. I know the customer is difficult, but that's why I'm giving it to you, because I trust you that you can handle such customers, and so on and so forth. And I mean that honestly.
That actually reminds me of my work at a Swabian company where it was like this. No praise is already the best praise.
But not being scolded, praise enough.
Exactly. I'm totally with you. So just to say in between, hey, you did a great job. Yesterday was like that for me. We had a joint project with customer. I then had a presentation with the supervisory board, and the supervisory board gave a lot of praise. They gave that as a school project, as the model project, how it should run, and everything that goes with it. I immediately wrote an email to the entire team afterwards and said, guys, this isn't just my achievement just because I was in the presentation. This is our achievement. And I always find that super important. Also, this feedback, then passing it on to the people, because we all know we are all strong as a team. You can certainly be a lone wolf every now and then, but if you want to be big and successful, then you always need a team somewhere. And I notice that often that's forgotten. That means then the one standing up front, the praise often goes to the one in the spotlight, but in the end, it's always the team or the last person in the team who doesn't get it.
Yes. Well, thank God that's happening less, but unfortunately, it's still too much. We are also a bit cold-hearted in Germany. We're also stingy with our emotions. You said the nonsense is yes. If I haven't been scolded, that's already praise. My dad was like that too. A completely different generation. My dad was the typical one. I graduated from high school. Then he says to me, why should I be happy? You want to study, so you have to finish high school? It's not a big deal. He didn't do anything unfair to me, but I would have wished for something different, simply. And that's just it. We always forget that emotions also have their place in this working relationship. You don't have to overdo it. It has to fit together at the end of the day. So if someone is always just tough and communicates in a very reduced way, we don't really believe that they would ever say, great, and I love you all, and you are the best, and so on. It has to be that way, that it fits the people and also matches the leadership style, but it has to exist.
If we look to the future now, I mean, you've already experienced a lot. You just said a lot is happening with you, especially regarding the topic of security. Where do you see the market? Now, I'll ask the question to, so to speak, the other side. Where do you see the market in 5 years?
So the German market is far from reaching its peak and prime. And I don't want to make it macroeconomic, but it has to. So, we have the federal elections this year, we have a new president in America, we still have a war or several wars. So, the situation we have this year, unprecedented like it, so many uncertainties and so much insecurity. So, now it's happening. There are many scenarios, I don't even want to list them, but let's say the election determines the stability of the country. And people have been talking about it ever since they found out that Trump is the president, of tariffs and trade wars, and so on. I believe that the area of cyber, or generally, in IT, that the topic of security itself is by no means at its peak yet. By no means is it everywhere yet. The acceptance and urgency that it needs, it's an absolute growth market. Absolutely. The demand for people is enormous. So, it's one of the areas where AI supports but doesn't, is in the foreground.
But just to jump in again, because I think it's an important topic, the demand is enormous. Do you think we can address that through education?
We can cover a large part of it, not everything. So we also need immigration, no question about it. Or companies like yours that simply recruit abroad and say, well, then we'll just set up a foreign entity. We need to work a bit more diversely, but we will be able to fully leverage the value creation when we have the people, when we train and further educate them. But that has to be an in-house thing. We're really talking about individual things. We're not talking about certificates or a customer that we buy for $99, but really practical examples from reality. The Thomas Meyer Metal Processing Company, 1750 people doing contract manufacturing for a screw manufacturer. So that's the case. The case is not that we are all like VW, because there aren't that many VWs, thankfully. But there are plenty of Thomas Meyers and Karl Heinz Müllers. I don't know. Injection molding. So if the system is hacked, in German, that means a whole region might have a huge problem. And that's the case we need to work on. And in such cases, we need to further educate the people. The demand for personnel is there. As I said, the vertical value creation density definitely needs to be increased, and it will be increased. And we need to prepare for a much, much faster change. I think these risks that we all have in cybersecurity, but also the speed of transformation, I don't think everyone is aware yet what all is out there. Just to give a small example, there was the pandemic, then it was about the supply chain, logistics, toilet paper, and new customers. Do you remember? The pandemic was over, and the same thing started again. Energy. Where do we store energy? Where do we get it from? In what way? For 50 years, no one has tackled this. And today we're thinking about it. Wait a minute, we need energy from multiple cycles. We need to store it, provide, and funny enough, we can't really plan the weather. So how much gas do we need? How much electricity do we still need? And that comes in shorter intervals. And when we also have completely different things, like a car. And what do I know? What other industries we have in Germany? We will also have to adjust to the fact that much bigger challenges are coming at shorter intervals. And then everything falls on the person. You need a team that is super agile and even looks forward to it and says, yes, another new problem again. We're tackling this together now. You don't need a team that says, we haven't done that for 30 years. That's not our topic right now, because you want to make money and you want to keep the people. So you have to set your people up in a way that they really want to tackle these problems. It won't work other way.
So I found that to be a really exciting conversation. I think for everyone who is definitely interested now, it's great to also take in your expertise. Feel free to reach out to him or follow him on LinkedIn. I think the topics we discussed today, especially in depth, were super interesting. Also for many people who might be thinking about one thing or another right now. Maybe even some bosses are thinking, ha, actually what he's saying is completely right. Because we talked about that earlier too. The ability to take criticism is unfortunately something we don't do very well in Germany, but I think everyone needs to question themselves at some point. Is this right what I'm doing here? Or can I also learn from others? And with that, I would like to thank you for your time. I really enjoyed it. So I would say that's it for this episode of Cybersecurity Chefsache. We'll see each other next time.
Thank you much.